Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is artist, designer, and educator Mary Millikan. Millikan graduated from SUNY Binghamton and the School of Art Institute in Chicago, where she received her degree in art education. In addition to painting and design, she also works in video arts and music. Her murals and memorial etchings are seen throughout the Southern Finger Lakes region, and her first solo exhibit, Portrait Interrupted, Recycling and Renewing the Personal, is currently showing at the Evelyn Peeler Peacock Gallery in Corning, New York. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, I want to know if there was anything in particular that got you into art, because it sounds like you started studying English literature in the beginning. So where did art come from?
Yeah, so I have been drawing for as long as I can remember. My mom still has one of my first drawings when I was like 3 or 4 years old of a brontosaurus. So I was obsessed with dinosaurs. And so she really encouraged me. She put me in a lot of different art classes and local art camps in Corning and Elmira. When it got time to go to college, I actually was at Corning Community College, and I got to meet a few times with artist Tom Buechner in Corning. And he told me not to go to art school because I had been applying to art schools, and at the time it was really competitive, and I was applying to Cooper Union, and they only take 4 transfer students a year, so I was kind of down on myself because I wasn't getting in. And then this prolific artist who himself had gone to the Beaux-Arts Academy and had been on the board at Brooklyn Museum, he told me not to go to art school.
Did he think it would ruin you, your rawness?
I think in hindsight, and unfortunately he died in 2012, which was right when I moved back to the Elmira area, so I never got to really talk to him about it. But I think what he meant was you always have the opportunity to make art. You don't have to go to school and you don't have to get a degree necessarily, but you have so few years and you have so little time to fully explore your interests and yourself. So I thought that was really good advice.
That sounds like good advice.
Yeah,
to me.
Well, for the longest time, I kind of thought, this guy. I do think for him, growing up in the 20th century, and he was a white man, and I think he did have a lot of instances of privilege and just that not everyone necessarily has. So I think it also was a tall order to
say that. I would be afraid that somebody like you would interpret or some, you know, emerging artist would think, he doesn't think I have the talent, right?
Well, no, he totally believed I had the talent, but I think he thought I had room to grow in other areas. Mm. I think he thought the talent was there, but I needed to maybe explore other things.
Oh, I think that makes perfect
and
sense.
And so I took that to heart. I ended up studying a lot of psychology. I took every psychology course that CCC had to offer because I thought maybe that's what I wanted to do. And then I always took art courses. I was always in painting. I actually did not get into the painting program at Binghamton, SUNY Binghamton, because I just could not finish an art piece. It was a problem for a long time. I just couldn't finish. I think I just was too perfectionist, and I just couldn't
finish. Well, I want to talk about what you have primarily concentrated on. It seems like portraiture. So
yeah.
Well, what drove you to that? Are you trying to interpret how you see people? And it's part of psychology, it almost feels like.
Yeah. Somebody said that recently. I think my mentor, Dan Reedy, said that. He said, there's so much psychology involved in your work.
Yeah.
And I think that that's true, and I have always been drawn to portraiture more than anything else. Landscape art really frustrates me. I think there's also the relationship that you have with the person that you're painting. It takes a lot to interpret somebody's face. It's their body. It belongs to them. So I think it's both challenging and it takes a lot of introspection and kind of bravery to try to tackle somebody's face. And
Because you know, people's faces change so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even during a 5-minute conversation, you go from sad to happy to, you know, contemplative. So you as a painter get to interpret which portrait of the person you actually want to put on canvas.
Yeah. And my sister always said too, I have 2 sisters and a brother, and my older sister always said, you have the way of painting somebody that's them, but looks a little bit better. And I thought that was very interesting because I was like, well, I paint what I see, but I think I do tend to paint people that I love and that I have a personal relationship with. So sometimes there is kind of a glow.
You know what I want to bring this up to? Because you said that traditional methods of portrait painting often act as a barrier between myself and my subject. So what do you do to break down that barrier? And how can it not just be your interpretation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like it's impossible for anybody, a painter or otherwise, to delve into somebody's psyche, right?
Yeah, so actually this work was really important to me. I think there's so many really fantastic portrait artists, and I just graduated from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and that is one of the top art schools in the world. So there are a lot of people who can paint, and there are a lot of people who are excellent draftsmen. You know, they can paint an eye like nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal as an artist has never been to be as realistic as possible. I don't want you to necessarily look at my work and think, oh, that's just like a photograph.
Yeah,
because we all have the ability to take photographs now. We all have the ability to render 2D images, and it's so easy. I remember talking to my roommate in college about this, and she's also a painter, and she said, there's a huge difference between a photo and a painting. A painting is a 2D sculpture almost, where you're building something up from the canvas, and a photo is just light going into a lens and making an impression. And in order to distinguish yourself, you really have to understand that painting is different from photography. So I really took that to heart, and when I set out to make this work, I thought, well, I love painting portraits. I'm good at it, but what do I have to bring to the table that's different from other people? And I think one thing was that I do have this deep impression from all the relationships that I have, and they have a very deep impression on me. So I wanted to incorporate that into my work. So what I mean by traditional methods kind of getting in my way is that portraiture has been something over the years that is prestigious and reserved for the wealthy, and really for those who can afford it or are offered the opportunity to have their portrait.
And they're usually very formal.
Yeah, they're very formal. People are looking out with their prized possessions or one of their pets or something. So I thought, you know, I come from Elmira. It's a very economically depressed area. We really have to make do with what we have. I've been a teacher for a long time, and I am very much an art on the cart teacher, where I have to pay for supplies and I have to teach kids how to make art with very little money or with no money at all. And so I thought it was interesting to paint portraits of people that have no prestige and have really no meaning to anyone other than myself.
Yeah, or their families.
Or their families.
And their friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a painting of an army general or a monarch. These are paintings
of
people.
Or bank presidents. You always hear about bank presidents commissioning portraits
after
they
retire.
Yes,
and I'm so excited about the artists who have been commissioned to paint the Obamas, because they are also very subversive in their work.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, number one, how can I subvert the portraiture process? I don't want it to be just yet another portrait.
You know, I want to talk to you about this. I guess you call it an ongoing project called Portraits of Us.
Yes.
Portraits of Women. I want to talk about it.
Fascinated
me on your website. You're reclaiming how real women look. You're using cardboard because women have always been throwaway humans in some segments of society. Talk to us about it. It fascinates me.
Back when the election happened, I was so angry. I think a lot of us were angry.
Mm-hmm.
I was particularly angry because I think when I lived in Chicago, I lived in a very liberal bubble where everybody kind of shared the same political views as I did. So coming back to Elmira, that wasn't necessarily the case. I had a lot of people who shared my views, but I had a couple situations where I almost got into a fight with some people. And I was just so, I felt so silenced, which just doesn't work for me. And I was just so mad, and I'm looking around at my dear female-identifying friends and my LGBTQIA friends and my friends who are of color, and I'm thinking to myself, how dare these people, not just one person, but a lot of people, try to silence us. And I was so mad. And I really thought about how I had all this cardboard left over, and I thought about how, you know, I also thought about environmentalism too, because that was at the point where it was like we were, the U.S. was kind of drawing itself away from a lot of progress that had been made scientifically and politically. So I had all this cardboard that I was about to get rid of, and I thought, no, I'll keep this. This is precious materials. Usually cardboard is thought of as disposable and easily discarded. And all of our packages come in it with all of these package papers and packaging materials, and we just throw it out instead of thinking anything of it. And I thought of how that was happening politically and socially, about how people were just throwing other people away.
So how did you come up with did you start painting pictures of your friends?
Yeah, so I had friends send me selfies. Because I also think there's something so feminist about a selfie. I mean, when I think back on a lot of feminist artists like Frida Kahlo and George O'Keefe. They're such like a selfie. You know, it was selfies before they were selfies.
Especially Frida Kahlo.
Yeah, such reflection of themselves.
Paintings of her diseases and her progress.
It's such a moment of intimacy for women in art history to paint themselves. So I talked to a lot of female friends, and I was like, here, send me a photo of yourself. And as you're remembering a time when somebody silenced you and when you felt really shut down. So a lot of those portraits actually ended up with these jarring faces of anger.
Oh, they're great. They're beautiful. And a lot of women's eyes are closed, and it looks like they're screaming or yelling.
Yes, and there's a lot of, like, screams, and they're very... they're not nice to look at. And I thought a lot about that because throughout art history, we have the male gaze, and all of the women are so serene, and they're looking up, or they're totally naked, as if that's like, we know that's what we do and that's what we're there for, and naked in their bodies, but also naked in their facial expressions. And women, I just thought, women don't exist for your pleasure. They don't exist for your comfort. They don't exist to be serene or calm. So, you know...
I think those portraits are absolutely fabulous.
Well, it's an ongoing project, and I would love
it. I would say it's not hard to look at all. I'm thinking, finally, you know?
Yeah,
I would
love to keep going with that.
So tell people. I mean, it's an ongoing project.
So it's an ongoing project. You can submit your selfie, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a selfie. It can be a photo somebody takes of you. I prefer it to be a selfie, but there are examples on my website of paintings and photos of women have sent in, and you can send it through my website. I have my email on my website.
And we'll give that at the end.
And we'll
give
that at the end as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully that'll be shown eventually, but it's an ongoing project. And it's also difficult for women to send those photos for me, and I understand that it's a big deal.
You had a stipulation on it, too. They have to be looking right at you.
Yes.
You know, look with their eyes. If their eyes are open, they have to be looking right into, like, your face.
Yes. I would prefer, if their eyes are open, I really would prefer you to be challenging the viewer. And at first, that's just the camera, and that's just you in the intimate moment, but eventually, hopefully, it would be. I envision it being kind of like a floor-to-ceiling installation.
Oh, I can see it as an exhibit, too. I mean, in this era, with what's happening now with sexual harassment, and, you know, it seems to me that art is coming to the culture's rescue right now in this era of Trump and suppression and, you know, sexual harassment finally coming to the fore, and as it's been hidden. But how do you feel about that? I mean, it feels like you're right on the cutting edge of that, and you started it before all this dialogue began.
Well, I read a lot of books in 2015 and a lot of accounts. I read a lot, like Sarah Schulman's book, Gentrification of the Mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking a lot about the protests and the art that came out of the AIDS epidemic.
The quilt is one of the most well-known.
Yes, and I take a lot from that, and I take a lot from this idea that we have to, you know, like the ACT UP movement, we have to shout out what we believe in before somebody
will listen.
Well, so that somebody might listen, and they might not for years, but that doesn't mean we have to stop or just say, you know, I'm comfortable now.
Well, you know, that's what happens through all movements. They say this now is not the time.
Mm-hmm.
That is the phrase you hear all the time about gay marriage. You heard it about gay rights. You've heard it about slavery, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now is always the time. And we're learning that finally in the 20th and the 21st century. And your art is reflecting that.
Yeah, it's always the time. I think about the Women's Convention, and there was so much criticism for the Women's March because, we didn't really have a clear goal of what we wanted, and who cares? You know, the point is we're out there and we're shouting, and we're basically saying we're here, whether you like, not like whether you like it or not, but we have always been here. And I think a lot of that is taken from the struggles of people of color and of LGBTQIA artists. They were the ones that started this. And it's wonderful to be able to look toward their work in the past and see the movements that they have started and that they are continuing to move with today.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel that I am building on something that has been going on for a long time, and I'm kind of just trying to...
Carry it on,
give as much credit as I can to the people who started it.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm doing anything particularly special. I think in Elmira, New York, it's kind of special, but...
It's special because we're all, this country is made up of small communities.
Mm-hmm.
So everything we do in a small community
matters. Well, and I care deeply about my community, and I know that there the people in power are not necessarily, you know, it's mostly white Republican older men, but there are a lot of people on the ground. It's a very diverse community, and I love the people who are from there. I love that community, and I taught in that community, and there are kids who are talented, and it breaks my heart that we don't give them a reason to stay there, and we don't make them comfortable there.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mary Milliken. She's an artist, designer, and educator, and we're talking about her work and some of her recent... I want to talk about your new exhibit that's happening at Corning.
Yeah.
It's called Portraits Interrupted. Talk to us about that. It's kind of like a, you know, part of the train of what we've been talking about.
Yeah, so this actually came out of my project, Portraits of Us, where I wanted to... when I proposed to do this art, it was for a grant award, so I had to write an involved proposal and send them my portfolio, and I really wanted to keep going with the work I had started with Portraits of Us, the cardboard portraits. But when I met with my mentor, Dan, I was talking about how I want to use cheap materials. I want to use materials that are accessible to anybody. I mean, Elmira is a very impoverished community, so I was thinking of them in particular. You know, we have one arts and crafts store. It's all the way in Big Flats.
Want to be able to use materials that's, you know, that you can almost find around the house.
You could find around the house, or you could find at, honestly, like Walmart for less than $5. So I bought these cheap acrylics. I bought spray paint. Spray paint is fabulous. It's wonderful. I love graffiti. I love the graffiti movement. I worked a lot with graffiti artists in Chicago. I think it's a shame. I'm not going to necessarily endorse it. But no, I think I do endorse that. I think it's a shame that Elmira doesn't have more graffiti. I think it's a shame that there's such a lack of presence of art in the community that we don't even have graffiti in our community. You know, kids don't even feel like they can express themselves with spray paint.
But that goes back to that freedom to say now. You know,
yeah.
Because people think they have to buy all these expensive materials and go to art schools.
I just got the opportunity. I was very lucky at my show to talk with like three CCC students. And they said, you know, how did you get your start here? How do you afford to do this? And I was like, I'm so glad you asked that. Because my work in my show, Portrait Interrupted, is all of the... I painted on fabric. I painted on clothes that people donated to me. And instead of going out and buying canvases already stretched, it was really important to me to build them myself, to go to my local hardware store and try to find the cheapest materials possible, but still quality.
Yeah, some of the portraits I've seen, you know, like in the advertisements, it's fascinating. You have portraits of people and then you have material over their parts of their faces. What is that symbolic of to you? To me, it felt like you're trying to silence people. Not you, but I mean, this is a portrait of faces being partially silenced.
So I actually think that's a really interesting interpretation. That's the first time I've heard that. It wasn't necessarily the subjects that I wanted to silence or wanted you to feel like I was silencing. I wanted to silence that traditional patriarchal gaze that all of us have growing up in this society, especially our society, this capitalist society, where we are so entrenched into the idea where we... things need to make money. So a lot of the art that gets churned out in the mainstream that most people see is kind of the same stuff. And the portraits are always these very beautiful, serene, large scale. And they kind of, to me, they've all looked the same.
And they're polished.
They're too. Polished, yeah. And you never mess up with their face because it's a very like valuable piece of the portrait. It's what portraits are for. So I thought, number one, I'm not going to paint the bodies. I'm only going to paint the face.
And you're going to mess with the face.
And I'm going to vandalize the faces. And that's what I did. And it wasn't to show any disrespect to my subjects. It was to kind of keep control over how people are able to see my work. My favorite piece that I did was a self-portrait of myself. And it bugs people. And it really rubs people the wrong way that you cannot see any facial features. So you see bits of hair and pieces of my face and like a few freckles. But you can't, there's nothing that identifies it as me. You can't see the eyes. You can't see the mouth and you can't see the nose.
And so what were you saying to people?
So for one thing, I was really trying to, I think art often cedes control to the viewer. I think there's this idea that artists owe something to their audience. And I kind of wanted to say, I don't owe you anything. This is my work. It doesn't matter that you don't recognize it as a person. It doesn't matter if you don't recognize it as me, because I know it's me. So part of that was kind of experimenting as an artist. But another part was I've gone through a lot of changes over the past few years, and pretty traumatic changes. I've discovered that I have a pretty deeply ingrained eating disorder. Mm. And I've gained over 125 pounds in the past 2 years, which was a very interesting, to put it neutrally, and very demoralizing transformation. And so when it came time to graduate from art school and to come back to Elmira, I really didn't even recognize myself anymore.
So that's what the portrait sort of portrays.
So that's what the portrait portrays. It's a message mostly to me, where you may not recognize yourself, but you're still here. So when I look at that painting, you know, the face is hidden. You can't see it. You see like maybe a piece of an ear and a piece of an eyebrow. And there was such a shame with gaining weight and becoming a fat person that really is a totally socially constructed shame. There's no reason for me to feel that shame, but it was there. And I turned around at the end of my process of painting and I thought, you know, here I've been waiting to lose weight for my life to begin, but my life has been moving on anyway.
That is such a great point.
And I've been making friends and achieving things and the world didn't stop just because I'm fat. So I thought to myself when I'm painting this, I just want, first of all, the important thing to note is the materials are entirely made up of all of the pants that I had to buy over when I would gain another 10 or 20 pounds every 2 or 3 months. So they range from size 8 to size 20. So the focus was also, I wanted you to see this, even if you didn't really know what it was, that the focus was those pants. It was my transformation, my body's transformation. The portrait was secondary. Or I'm sorry, it was always a portrait. But I don't necessarily think portraits need to be faces. Portraits, to me, a portrait is a showcase. It's an interpretation of someone. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a face. That, to me, it was also the pants that I've gone through over the past
You know, that
years.
Sounds like what you're doing with other, you know, the portraits of me. Mm-hmm. Because it sounds like you're trying to show people bits of themselves that they might not even recognize.
Yeah, or to just show that, I mean, people have fun and are, you know, we live in such a weird time because we have social media and it's just a totally, I don't want to say curated because it's an overused word, but it's a very carefully selected thesis.
It is. It is
curated.
Lives. It is policed. People want to show a certain portrait of themselves.
Policed is an excellent word.
Yeah.
And I just thought, here we are experiencing myriad emotions. Let's, for a second, focus on how angry and frustrated we are, even if it's just for one moment, even if it's just for that one photo. Because regardless of what's going on, yes, we're still moving on with our lives, or we're trying to, and as our friends are being deported and sent away or silenced or imprisoned and our lives are moving whether we want them to or not, but never forget these moments of anger that we have.
Oh, yeah. God, you must be so thrilled that you have art as an outlet for some of this.
I am. I've always, you know, because I've tried
you're,
to...
You're putting, I mean, you're talking to me about it, but you're putting it into your art as well, this emotion that you're talking to me
it
about.
It took a long time to feel comfortable doing that. I was talking to my dad, and I was saying, especially since I've come home, everyone calls themselves an artist. Like, there are people who have just started painting 6 months ago, and they're doing watercolors for the first time. And,
that's
and
true.
They're painting birds, and that's wonderful. It really is. I think should create. We should spend this life creating instead of consuming.
I know a lot of people are calling themselves bloggers because they wrote a paragraph, put it online.
Well, I never felt comfortable calling myself an artist because I just didn't feel like I was there yet. To me, artists are people who have a very unique perspective of the world that they are able to express through visuals or through performance or mm-hmm. what have you. And so to me, artists are about, and I think in my artist talk, I talked about the artist Tracy Emin, who's a feminist artist who's just deeply personal. And she was like, you can't just throw paint up on a canvas and call that art. That's not art.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, you have to do things with integrity. You have to have a concept behind it. And when I was at SAIC, School of the Art Institute of Chicago, I'm just going to call it SAIC from now on, one of the first things we had at orientation, our dean said, make art that has purpose. So I was always a good portrait artist. I was always a good drawer. But it was about expressing the things that were inside of me. And I really felt like probably until I went through this experience of, I mean, growing through my 20s, but also having this eating disorder, I really didn't feel brave enough to truly be authentic to myself.
And you know that, we're almost out of time. That goes back to our first part of our conversation when that mentor of yours told you you should go out and get experience. That's exactly what people need to put into their art. You're right. You can't just put paint on a canvas. Mm-hmm. You have to have a self.
Well, and that's what I told those kids at my show. I'm like, you just got to keep making and you got to live your life.
Yeah.
You can spend all the money you want. You can go to all the prestigious art schools you want. You can take all the lessons you want. You're still not an artist.
Yeah.
So you got to make, you got to show, you got to talk, be able to talk about your art. And you really have to think it through. You know, there's so many artists out there. What do you have to offer?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mary, we're almost out of time. Can you give some contact information and tell us again about the show?
Yes.
The
so my show opened October 23rd. It goes until November 24th. I think that's Thanksgiving Day, actually. And it's on Market Street in Corning, right next to Soulful Cup. It's the Evelyn Peeler Peacock Gallery inside the Arts Council of the Southern Finger Lakes building.
And also give us your website.
So my website is www.marymilliken.com.
And people can go look at your art. And
look at my art and contact me.
And go to the exhibit if you can.
Mary that would Milliken, be great.
It has been such a pleasure to talk to you.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, too.
Thank you. Again, I've been talking to Mary Milliken, an artist, designer, and educator from Elmira, New York. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.